curiosities arise, as this is a potent and exciting time. I would just love to hear from you. And so people can, when they visit your website, they'll get to read about Native to Life and what it means and where it comes from. But I think it's beautiful to hear straight from you a little bit of what's behind it and what's within it and really the heart of it and where it comes from.
Whew. That really takes us on a journey, a little backstory journey. I think it started really in 2012 when I dropped out of college and took a one-way flight to New Zealand on my 20th birthday. And here I am about to turn 30. I was in Auckland. I had my camera at the time. I was really deeply enmeshed in photography. It's kind of my first art form. And I was just sitting in the plaza. I think I'd had a cup of coffee and was enjoying the morning. Seemingly out of nowhere, all of these people started to gather. They were dressed in colors and forms of clothing that I had never seen. And they spoke a language that I hadn't heard. They gathered, and it seemed like something was kind of going on. They started chanting these powerful chants and what I would have called dancing at the time. It was pretty intense to see the energy of it. And shortly thereafter, this like battalion of police officers showed up with these like big clear
shields,
yeah, and like looked like they were preparing for some kind of something. I was like, oh my god, what is going on? I didn't realize that I was sitting in front of the Parliament House. And the Maori, the indigenous to the island of Aotearoa, which we call New Zealand, they were peacefully demonstrating in favor of recognition of their place in the islands and for Parliament, which was basically a British colonial leftover, asking Parliament, hey, or really not so much asking, but telling them, hey, this is a land that we've been on for a long time. And you guys came here not too long ago and you took over and you set up shop and you act like we're not here. You gotta acknowledge our presence, you know? And they did this in the form of haka, Maori traditional dance and chant, you could say. It's not dancing. They spoke at length, some very, very passionately. And as a little fresh 20-year-old, I had my camera and, you know, plenty of space on my memory cards. And I have all these videos on hard drives back, you know, in storage of this peaceful, I could say protest, but it was more of just like a getting clear. That was my first contact with, my first very clear contact with the importance of the indigenous voice and the recognition of the short-sightedness and ignorance, or perhaps not ignorance, of colonial cultures, colonial societies. And the conversations I had there, the questions that I was led to ask, I could have never imagined the journey that they would lead me on. I found it very important to in the ways that I could at the time, given my own immense ignorance, in the ways that I could, I felt it important to try to be in touch with the Maori culture.
Mm.
I traveled to Lake Taupo to a Maori community that was open to all people, where they cooked the food, the meat, with the heat of the earth.
Ooh.
Yeah. It was amazing. Beautiful. It was amazing. I'm like, what? You can put your food in the ground in a hole and cook it, and then it comes out and it's way more ono, way more delicious than any food I've ever had in my whole life. What? This is amazing. You know, and so these experiences started to open my eyes to a much bigger dynamic going on in life. And I was told of their creation story that the Hawaiians call the Kumulipo. They shared stories, we talked story, and we shared our cultures, you know? I shared where I came from, they share where they come from. And they very graciously and directly pointed things out to me. And oftentimes it's a very direct and loving nudge to clarify or address some kind of imbalance or some ignorance or, hey, brah, that sounded a certain kind of way. You know, were you being condescending there?
Because
if you were, let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it.
You know, it wasn't like, get out of here, stop doing that. It wasn't shame. It was acknowledgement and in presence, the movement of growth. And like, while we're here, let's transmute it.
Mm. Right? Can I ask, do you recall what they spoke of that imbalance? You say they spoke of it directly. Do you recall how they spoke of the imbalance?
There were so many. I mean, it was like I witnessed it in other people's conversations. I witnessed it in my own conversations. It was whatever was present in that moment. Like if something that I said came across a certain kind of way, they would just acknowledge it. And in the acknowledgement, recognize perhaps a more loving or a more well-rounded way of expression, you know? And I received that a lot while I was there because, simply put, I was coming from growing up in the suburbs of the United States and had tremendous ignorances baked into me. And they were very gracious in the ways that they helped me acknowledge exactly that. I just didn't know. Yeah.
So many of us don't.
Yeah, exactly. And so those experiences in New Zealand over those 3 months that I was there, keep in mind that was my first time leaving the United States. I'd really only traveled to the East Coast. That was very foundational for me. And that led me on a journey, by no means intentional, into contact with many indigenous people. So over the past basically 9 years of journeys through Polynesia and South America, this all brought me to earlier this year in 2022.
Is that what year it is?
Apparently. I was in the Sierra Nevadas of what we call Northern Colombia and had been taken on this magical journey from the southern border up through mostly central Colombia from one indigenous family to the next. And I was sharing some of that experience upon being asked. And this man said, "Ooh, I think I know a place that you should visit." And he spoke of an Arawako family. Arawako is an indigenous group, a tribe in northern Colombia, one of many. The sort of spiritual leaders of their tribes are brought together and are given a name called a mamo. They're the like spiritual leaders, you could say, the seers, the ones who are responsible for communing with life, communing with nature, communing with earth, and guiding and directing and cleansing the heart of humanity and the heart of the earth, connecting with the heart of the earth. This is a thread of the quilt of what they participate in. Mm-hmm. I was led to go stay with this Arawako Mamo family, two brothers. I stayed for about a week. We planted fruit trees. We ate together. We woke up at 4 a.m. and meditated for hours and then bathed in the river. We picked seeds out of cotton as it rained. It was fun because, you know, my mother tongue is English. Theirs is Arawako. And we were both speaking Spanish like kids, right? It was fun. And each night we gathered around the fire just as the sun was setting. And this was a time for Duavico, one of the brothers. This was a time for him to share some of the messages that come through. Sometimes it was messages that come through. Sometimes it was perspective. Sometimes it was asking questions, having us explore. We would talk about the meditation that morning and about the experiences that we had planting trees and working with the land and stewarding the earth. And so on my fifth night there, we were speaking about the ignorances of colonial culture. And it was a very similar conversation to the conversations that I had had in New Zealand nearly a decade earlier. And I'm very grateful to say that I've been on quite a journey between those conversations. And I've had many, 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 many of these conversations with all kinds of people all over the place. And they seem to all sort of culminate to this one night.
Around the fire.
Around the fire in the Sierra Nevadas. As Duavico spoke of the importance of coming back into balance with nature, acknowledging the changes of the climate, acknowledging the quality of the water flowing through the river, acknowledging the role that humanity in recent times has played in the imbalances that Mother Earth is feeling and experiencing. In speaking of the role of the Mamo to cleanse the heart of humanity every morning, and to do what they could on the energetic level and on the physical level and on the mental and emotional levels to help. The question arose, this is me asking, Duavico, how do you imagine that happening in the Western world? You know, he had spoken kind of broadly and sort of generally about the importance of making changes. And he turned, he sat up and looked right at me across the fire. You know, typically he was leaning back in his hammock, and he leaned up and sort of put his feet on the ground, you know, and looked right at me across the fire and said, you know, this is all in Spanish, but I'll, in English, basically he said, "Brother, they're not coming out here to the middle of the forest in the middle of the mountains to hear me speak of this." He said, he nodded towards me and he said, "Look at you. You look like them, don't you? You speak their language, right? You come from where they come from. Si o no? Yes or no?" By the time they're asking you, si o no? It's like, yeah. But it's not actually a question, right? And I said, "Well, yeah, that's true. I do speak their language, and I do look like them, and I do come from where they come from." He said, "So what are you going to do?" And actually, he asked me, "¿Qué haces tú?" Which is like, "What do you do?" Because we always spoke in the present moment, because none of us knew past tenses and future tenses of Spanish. It gets confusing. But ¿qué haces tú? What do you do? Which I translate as like, "What are you doing? What are you going to do?" ¿Qué haces tú? This is where it got interesting, right? Because I said, "Whew, what a question. Yeah, I'll sit with that, you know?" And he said, "We're sitting with it now. This isn't a question of like to flounder into some future, you know? We're asking this question now. ¿Qué haces tú?" Like a direct question, like actually asking me, like, "Please tell me, what are you doing?" And I'll say that he was aware, because we had spoken a lot over those days. He was aware that of the heart and the intention of the things that I see. And I had expressed that, you know, I'm not fooled into thinking that, you know, Western colonial culture has the answers, and I've been significantly impacted by those living in connection with the world around us and the world within us and the present moment. And so sitting around this fire for the next, I don't know, hour, 2 hours, it became nearly an interrogation of me.
Not letting you off the hook.
Not letting me off the hook in answering this question. And what I can see in hindsight is that Duovico was quite graciously directing me to that.
Ooh, walking you into it.
Walking me right into it, you know? I think he was aware of how I was poised and what I was and am ready to hold. And so we explored this question. What are you doing? ¿Qué haces tú? Phew. And it was very confronting, right, in that moment. There were others around, and I was having a hard time, you know, coming to a recognition of this question and all of this stuff. And I will fast forward to a couple days later, or maybe 3 or 4 days later, after I had taken the 8-hour hike back out from their land, and crossed the river 6 times, and, you know, hitchhiked and jumped in the back of trucks and gotten back into what we call civilization. And I stayed at a hostel again, sleep in an actual bed instead of my very, at this point, very moldy hammock.
Ooh, yep.
And so I stayed at the hostel again, and I was writing in my journal. And the deeper recognition of what Duovico was leading me to landed that moment, that morning. And I had this recognition when recounting the movements of our conversation around the fire and looking at the contrast between the sort of tenets of Western culture, of colonial culture, and the reality of the indigenous cultures that I've lived with and learned with. And something dawned on me. It kind of hit me like a lightning bolt of, oh my gosh, pretty much every one of the indigenous cultures that I've been with whom I felt like a deep level of integrity and a very clearly grounded way of being, what I saw in each of those was a connection with nature, right? With the aliveness that surrounds us in this external world. A deep connection inwardly with oneself, with the spirit and the aliveness that flows through the individual. And a potent connection with, we'll say, the field or the space in which those two connections meet, the present moment. The present moment, one could say, is the field or the space in which the aliveness within any given being meets the aliveness outside of that being, which is really not inside or outside. It's one aliveness coming together and meeting in the present moment. What I realize is, oh my gosh, this is fundamental in each of these indigenous cultures, in each of these communities. I can see that clearly across the board. And what the lightning bolt moment was realizing that these are exactly the things that are nearly inexistent in Western culture, in colonial culture. Connection to oneself, connection to nature and the aliveness of the world around us, and connection with the present moment as the present moment. Are you kidding me? What we typically see, and this is not black or white, but typically what we see in Western colonial culture is a denial or avoidance of the actual essence of us, consciously or unconsciously. A denial or avoidance of the aliveness of the world around us, because we tend to cut it down and pollute it and bomb it. And this extractive use of the present moment as a means to get from the past to the future. And what this looks like is a polarity in which on one side you have a deeply rooted connection with these aspects of life, and on the other side you have the near inexistence of those things.
Yes.
And it's clear to see what that how that dynamic plays out. And fascinatingly, it's those with those connections who are the ones coming out of the forest to be like, brothers, sisters, uncles, aunties, please, please, let's talk about this. Let's make some changes. And so what that brought me to is this recognition of, wow, in my own humble experience, I have come deeply into contact with connection with the aliveness within, connection to the aliveness without, and connection in the present moment. These are things that through the journey have been deeply stewarded within me. So far, it's an infinite journey. To the extent that those things have unfolded in me, I can share. That is what I recognized is the working answer to Duovico's question, ¿qué haces tú? To open a door for those steeped in Western culture and colonial culture into one's own connection with the aliveness within, with the aliveness without, and with the space in which those meet, the present moment. I can't give anyone anything, obviously. And I can point a finger. I recognize that there are millions of people, perhaps hundreds of millions of people, perhaps billions of people in the world who feel the inner turmoil of being damn near disconnected from the actuality of aliveness.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that because that's absolutely what I felt in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And through these journeys over the past decade, I've found myself really quite accidentally, or not by what I could call conscious choice, intimately connected with these aspects of life. Genuinely, I could say, oops, you know, and to whatever extent I'm able to, I'm certainly more than happy to share those things that have come to me. Do I have all the answers? No. Do you? For you? More or less, yeah. You certainly have the connection to the aliveness from which all of the whole thing arises to begin with. And so certainly, I can point a finger and you can go there. In exploring that question, ¿qué haces tú? I started to ask the question, what is it that people in colonial culture and Western culture can connect to that doesn't appropriate culture in the process? Can't just take the things that other cultures are doing or take their dress or their ways, you know, specific to them and adopt them. That's very disrespectful. So the question became, what is it that no matter where you come from, no matter who you are, what is it that humans can connect to as fundamentally beings of life? I, for years, felt like a cultural orphan. I more or less, at least mentally, at least conceptually, I turned my back on modern colonial culture. I have to say, I still participate in it. But in terms of who I identified as, it was clear that I was not identified with Western colonial culture. And so the question became, for those who are stepping out of a culture that they were steeped in, what can they turn to that isn't a cultural appropriation, that isn't a way of taking from others? How can people find that within themselves? And that was really where it came right down to the very intrinsic foundation, getting to the root of, okay, what is happening when Hawaiians chant in hula. What's really happening as the mamo plant trees? What's occurring in those deep meditations in the forest? Why do the Kichwa commune with the plant spirits? In tracing the roots of all of that, that's where I came to the foundational level recognition of, wow, fundamentally, these cultures are connecting to the inner aliveness, connecting to the aliveness around us in nature. And those things are happening within the field of the present moment. Those are three fundamental aspects of all life. Those three are native to life, not to any particular culture, not even to humans, right? Native to life. All of life is alive inwardly, is in connection with the world around, and it's all happening in the present moment. Fundamental for all life. That is native to life. And we are native to life. Each seemingly individual being is native to life. I grew up being labeled a Florida native. Prior to being native to Florida, prior to being native to Western culture, I'm native to life. Exploring my own connection makes it abundantly evident to me that we all share that, and we're all, so to speak, built upon that foundation. We all have access to it.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has to get anything that they don't already got.
Mm-hmm.
We are all alive inwardly. We are all surrounded by life, and we're all here in the present moment. And hey, if people want or need some pointers in embracing that in deeper ways, cool. I'll share what I can share. But I'm quite clear that nobody really needs that. And ideally, I can point a finger here and there so people can go off on their own. You know, that whole age of the guru shit is way in the past. Nobody needs a teacher for life. One only needs connection with themselves, connection with the world around them, and connection with the present moment, and it all arises from there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what native to life exists for, is to share some perspectives, share some pointers to what's already alive in everyone,
mm-hmm.
fundamentally. And from the bedrock of recognizing that, to connect with oneself, to connect with nature, to connect in the present moment, really just be here in the present moment, as so many have already spoken. That is a gateway to what we could call a harmonious way of participating in life. And I think it gets a whole lot more fun being here. And being in connection with everything and having butterflies land on your finger, you know, being intimately engaged with the magic and the mystery all around us. Recognizing that fundamentally we're not separate from any of that.
Which is why recognizing that we're not separate places the power back, which is where you come from when you say, this is a pointer, but you're the one to bring yourself to that connection. You're the one to join the connection that exists within you. Mm-hmm. Always. Never yeah. separate.
Yeah. Everyone for oneself.
Mm-hmm.
And important to note within that, that the journey of nearly completely disconnecting from all of that is the journey of recognizing the value and the importance and the intrinsic beauty of being connected with oneself, with nature, and with the present moment in which it's all happening. Had we not diverged, one could say that we wouldn't consciously recognize the immense gift that it is. If you ask a kid, as precious as they are, as intimately engaged with all three of those aspects as they are, if you ask them, hey, is it a gift to be alive? They're like, whatever. Mm. Like, look at this bug. And there's their answer, right? And there's something tremendous about coming to that very same space and being aware of it. Coming to that consciously, which is a conundrum of words because we're always there. We just build stuff on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
We're always intimately alive within. We're always in connection with the world around us. Take a breath in. Take a breath out. There you are, intimately engaged with all of existence. Mm. And we're always here in the present moment. It's not like we've actually left any of this. We've just put so much stuff on top of it that you couldn't really even see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And where the child, in their innocence, is simply just being that. The journey of sort of being uprooted out of all of that, being clouded up and commoditized and all of this in the culture that we come from, in that journey is the potency of circling right back around of, so to speak, where we started.
Yes.
And doing that from the place of like conscious awareness and intention.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that there's an exponential magicalness in that.
Mm-hmm.
In that return journey. Mm-hmm. You know, the prodigal son.
I find that perspective to be so powerful and so healing in itself, to recognize that perhaps it is that disconnection and that darkness and that turmoil, that experience leads us back to that return.
Yeah.
That's so powerful. It feels like it's all okay.
Mm.
It's all beautiful in that way. And it holds value. The disconnection, the being uprooted, the being blacked, that holds value.
Yeah.
In that perspective.
Everything that exists is fundamentally an expression of all of aliveness.
Mm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And value is determined by one's perspective.
Mm. The idea of it.
Yeah. With words, we could say that everything is sort of intrinsically valuable, you know, and then we associate our particular value of it accordingly. But yeah, it's so vital that we have been having this experience.
Mm-hmm.
And where it can seem like humanity is completely fucking up,
mm-hmm.
and just like ruining everything and going so far out of, no. I feel that this whole experience has been a means of, so to speak, elevation of the human race.
Mm.
And doesn't everything that really makes us grow come with a sort of edge of intensity?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, perhaps a bit of pain?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at a pine tree, it's easiest to see in pine trees. At times you'll see a pine tree, like maybe about halfway up or so, you'll see this bend in their central trunk. And it looks like it like leaned over for a minute and then kept going. Where that bend is, there's a reflection in that tree's roots. And where the roots encountered really hard rock,
mm-hmm.
the tree took resources from the trunk, from the top of the tree, and put it into the roots so those roots could push through and crack through and find their way through that hard rock.
Mm-hmm.
And in so doing, what we see is a sort of lean, the sort of bend in the top of the tree. And that's indicative of its strength in the roots and the extra effort that I had to put into like pushing through that tough spot. That's kind of how I see this epoch of humanity is, you know, we're kind of pushing through a tough spot. And on the apparent level, it looks like, we're like, you know, kind of leaning over, you know, might kind of fall. It's looking pretty dismal for the humans, you know?
It's all too easy to see that part.
Yeah.
And to focus on that.
Yeah.
How perhaps far we've been led astray, or how far away we are, how out of balance we are. It's easy to see that and focus upon that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what you speak of here and what I find such resonance in is first coming to acceptance of where we are. That feels like the doorway. Or, peering beneath the surface of what we see, looking a little closer, accepting what is. And in that acceptance comes the greater understanding that life is this way. Life is moving this way. Why? Why? And appreciating the movement for what it is and what is coming from it. What comes from the massive imbalance is the push for harmony, right? By those of us who feel it so deeply and so prevalently, so presently.
Yeah, it's a natural response. You know, the tree doesn't really ask upon reaching that rock if it should or shouldn't push through. It's going to try. You know, it's going to make that effort, so to speak. And if it can, it can. If it can't, it can't. And it's all present. You know, it's not that we're trying to get anywhere. It's just being in the movement of it. You know? It's not, there's not a goal to make humanity harmonious and balanced within the whole totality of it. It's just recognizing, oh my gosh, here and now, there is incredible life. Check it out. Yes. Remember? That's it. The rest will happen as it does. It doesn't really matter. That's secondary. It doesn't matter really if we could determine humans as having come back into balance with life. On a bigger level, I mean, be careful with this statement, right? But on a bigger level, speaking cosmically, in the expanse of millions and millions and millions of clusters of galaxies with millions of suns and billions of planets around those suns, right? On a cosmic level, one could say that seemingly it's unimportant what's going on here on Earth. You know, this is one of billions and billions and trillions and trillions. You know, just like one little cell in your body.
And we make it so significant.
Well, because we're here and we're participating in it, right? And it is significant, it is important, so to speak, because here we are in life living it. You know, life doesn't waste its resources, and here is this tremendous aliveness here on this planet. When you zoom out, it's a little blip, and yet it's the whole thing. Just like one's own self, you know, a little blip and the whole thing.
Paradox.
And so if we're trying to go anywhere with it, if it's trying to be something in the future, let all that go.
Yeah.
It's just what's right here, which is so immensely, incredibly alive.
Yes.
Life is right here.
Yes.
Life is right here. And to open the door to that for oneself is beautiful.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And if we get to play in that, cool. I know from my own experience that people are wanting to be there. So, hey, here's some pointers. Here's some perspective. here you go. Yeah, let's play. Let's have fun. Check it out. Life's amazing. Woo!
Yes, thank you. This is so beautiful. It's so huge, really, because just as it's so easy to focus on the imbalance, it's so easy to then focus on some future goal of harmony. And I hear you speak of, hey, we can forget about all that. We can kind of toss that over to the side and focus on what's here. Life is here. We don't have to worry about attaining any goals in the future, or it's just about what's here, joining what's here, being with what's here, being with what you are, being what you are.
Yeah, you can't be anything else.
You're never not. You never are anything else.
Yeah, and you're never ever anywhere else. You know,
but so we can be oriented elsewhere, oriented to the future goal, oriented to what needs to happen or else.
Yeah. And when one is rooted in the present, there's the obvious, like, practical reality of, yeah, there are some things that require the movement of time and, you know, for native to life to exist, there's what you could say is a sort of trajectory into the future. And it's arising as a result of what's occurring right now in the inspiration that is felt in the present moment to do the thing in the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
And if that ends up looking like a bigger picture, it arose directly from the present moment. And it wasn't pushing into some future goal.
Mm-hmm.
It's just arising presently. And that's the beauty. And on the surface, yeah, it can look like a thing oriented in time. What's actually occurring, though, is that the present moment is being intimately engaged with.
Yes.
Yeah, and communed with. And out of that can come the things that exist in time, that exist in what one could define as past and future. It's when that, perhaps you could say with words, when the past and the future aspects are secondary.
Secondary.
When they arise out of presence rather than presence being used to get from the past to the future. You see the difference there?
Yes.
And yeah, that's the sort of reorientation of what's going on. And it's all right here.
That's so beautiful. Thank you. And I feel it rings true as well on the individual level in one's individual life. Someone who is really struggling to maintain, or someone who feels out of balance in their own individual life. Recognizing that orienting to the present, primarily, all else that we hope to shift and change in our lives comes as a result of that. So it's like the circumstances are secondary to the primary connection, or the circumstances themselves unfold naturally when the primary focus is on the presence,
mm-hmm.
is on the present.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the rest of it's ideas. And you can only have those ideas in the present moment.
Mm.
Whatever you think about your life, you're using the present moment in order to think about it. Why not be here?
True.
Simple.
True.
You know? You can think about the nighttime when the sun is out and totally miss the sun.
Uh-huh.
Or you could just be here with the sun and then be there with the night, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It really gets so simple.
Mm.
You know, and yeah, a lot of ideas and thoughts arise when one thinks about being present, but that's not being present.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Thinking about it.
Right. Rather than just, we're here now. It's so simple. Mm-hmm. It's so simple that we pollute it with complexity and complications, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's just right here, and everyone can handle the present moment. Whatever arises in the present moment, you can handle that. You got that.
Ah, yes, yes.
whatever this is here now, you can handle that. It's when all the rest of the stuff comes polluting this moment that it becomes seemingly entirely overwhelming.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right? I resonate so much with this.
Yeah. Keep it simple. Mm-hmm. Keep it simple. It's fine. Trust me, within that simplicity, life will be absolutely fucking intense and wild. Don't worry. Mm-hmm. You'll still get that too. There's the mind trying to complicate everything, right? It'll have plenty of complicated moments. Just let the simple stuff be simple. Let go of all that stuff. Mm. It'll get wily, don't worry. You won't just be sitting on a mountain somewhere forever. Doing nothing, sitting in a cave somewhere. Trust me, even sitting in a cave gets crazy. We did that yesterday. Uh-huh. You know? Yeah, bats flying around and spiders biting and fear of the dark. Uh-huh. And trust me, even sitting in the cave in the Himalayas gets intense. Mm. You know?
Mm. What I hear you say is, in the present moment, our problems, our fears, our worries, our anxieties, they exist in the mind.
Yeah.
The present moment, you said we can handle that. Oh, yeah. The present moment, what's the problem here? They exist in the mind. They don't exist in the present. And the fears and the worries and the anxieties themselves are so much more. They're so.
Don't worry about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just let it go. Yeah. Let that whole thing go. Yeah. Don't even fuck with the problems.
It's way worse in the mind than it ever is in the present moment.
Absolutely.
Like, it's, even I think about when we were in a motorbike accident recently, and I haven't been this time here in Thailand and in Indonesia. It was my first time really riding on motorbikes in general. I've not really ridden on motorcycles. And I felt myself a few times in Indonesia when we would hop on the back, like a taxi, a little bit of fear, especially when we didn't have helmets and the guys were zipping around. And I felt myself being quite scared in some moments. Mm-hmm. And that fear that I experienced in my head in the moment where there wasn't actually anything to be scared of, like in that moment, we were driving perfectly fine. The fear was only in my head. Mm-hmm. That fear itself was way more intense than the actual moment that we got into a motorbike accident. Mm. In that present moment of the motorbike accident, it was just presence. It was a lot. It was intense. It was painful. The bike fell on my foot and it was the whole experience. But I recognize that the fear I held of it in my mind was way worse than the actual moment of that fear being presently experienced. In the present moment, it was what it was, and we did what we did to get through it and to move through it. We were there in that present moment, how we had to be to get through it. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't anywhere near this whole fear thing that I had built up in my mind. So in my experience, that fear that I had in my head was way worse than the moment itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Surrender thinking about the present and just be here.
Yeah. Yeah. Surrendering the thoughts about it.
Yeah. Surrendering the thought about surrendering.
Mm.
All of a sudden, it's just the simplicity of what is.
Mm-hmm. So simple.
Yeah. Just here.
And spacious and quiet.
Yeah. Until it's not.
Until it's not.
And if it's a motorbike accident, you'll be right there for it.
Yep.
You know, if it's rain, you'll be right there for it. If it's a long line at some store, you'll be there for it and wonder why you're there in a store. And you could be doing other things, you know. And then you're like, oh, here I am resisting the present moment. Oh, ah, what? Well, that's present too. Why not just be here for it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Orienting yourself here as opposed to elsewhere.
Yeah, it's where you always are.